this week's theme is not a classic theme. Do you recognise the theme?
No, it was like, no, a bit embarrassed actually. It's really, really good, but no, you always get me with these. What's that one?
It's ours.
What?
It's our brand new theme. Courtesy of Simon Bruce, we have a brand new theme. That is the that's the we're going to need a bigger pod theme.
Oh my word, that's going to be at the start of every single episode now.
That is.
Oh, and who did that?
Simon Bruce.
Oh my word, that's different class, Simon. Thank you so much, sir. That is Wow, I'm gobsmacked. I'm absolutely gobsmacked.
Look how happy he is.
I can't believe it. That's superb. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
I think we should invite Simon in on an episode to say thank you. I think it'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I hate to tell Simon this, but once the magic is removed of post-editing, maybe it could be a little... Mind you, I've been disappointing people all my life, so why stop now?
But a glorious radio studio for which he has never visited. It might be wise.
Yeah, by all means. By all means, sir.
I think we should invite him in. Anyway, there we go. Open invitation to Simon Bruce to come in on a future episode. That's the We're Going to Need a Bigger Pod theme. Thanks to Simon Bruce for that. We're going to use that every episode. He was also responsible for a few jingles that you can hear along the way. And welcome to We're Going to Need a Bigger Pod. I'm John Brown.
I'm Paul Marsh.
And this is the film podcast that's mainly populated by moaning middle-aged men.
That gets lots of names and films and other things wrong.
Do we know anything about film?
Why are we doing this? Why do people listen to us? I honestly have no idea.
I expect it's for the same reason people watch Fail Army.
It could be. Everyone loves a car crash, don't they?
Anyway, lots coming up on this week's show. Thank you to everyone that's still listening to last week's show, actually, because that came out only a few days ago. But we are on track. I think we're on track now, aren't we, with every Wednesday?
I believe so.
Every Wednesday. Check back here every Wednesday now. We've pretty much got that on track. Scoreheads is also going to be every Friday from now on, so you can check that out too. And, of course, you can catch me on the Composer Series on Express FM every Sunday night at 6. Paul is also on Express FM.
I had to think about that then, didn't I?
Literally been here all morning.
Oh, am I? Am I on Express? Yes, I'm on Express every weekday morning from 10 a.m.
He's in the same chair in the same studio.
Do you know what? I feel like I'm melting into this chair. I sit here so much. I feel like it's shaping around me.
So he's in this chair and the studio he's in now, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. every weekday morning, and then one of those days he'll do the podcast directly after. So he literally doesn't move. We don't let him out of the room. I do composers series in the next door studio, so I get to sort of flip between the two, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I feel like I'm probably here a lot more than I am home.
Well, according to your wife, no. Anyway, what's on the show, Paul?
Oh, so much. Always so much. We have got some fantastic interviews today, including from director of Trolls Band Together, Walt Dorn.
Yeah. Caught up with Walt. That was a lovely conversation. Honestly, the most positive thing you will hear on this podcast, probably.
I'm also going to be speaking to cast and director of the new movie Mindset. That was really good. I've very much enjoyed that one. It's a very interesting movie, but we will get to that a little bit later.
You want to catch us on socials? We've got other bits and pieces as well. Of course, the usual bits and pieces, film reviews, film listings. We'll be
tip
talking
top
about
five.
Tip top five, of course. This week, it's The Governor. Martin Scorsese.
I feel that this could cause some friction.
I think it already has. I've had a couple of interesting inboxes about this, which we'll get to. I'll read those out when we get there. But some very interesting submissions as well, which I'm really excited about. Like, thank you so much to everybody that put their Martin Scorsese tip top fives in. It's some interesting reading. I'm still thinking about mine even now while we're sat here recording this, but because it's a difficult one. That
I generally try to do my top five either before or as soon as we put the post out, because I know that when other people's top five starts coming in, it dilutes what I have already chosen. I think, oh, I should put that in my top five, really, because that's awesome.
Sways your opinion.
It really does. So
I try
to lock down my top five before that happens, if possible.
No prizes for guessing that Goodfellas is going to feature a lot.
I think there's probably a couple that will feature a lot, but then the rest are very open to opinion.
If you want to follow us on socials, I'm at John Brown TV. That's at J-O-N, John Brown TV.
I'm Paul Swampy Marsh.
And you can follow the pod at Need a Bigger Pod for updates on not just this podcast, but Scoreheads and some of the other great stuff we're doing as well. And at Express FM, of course, if you want to catch us on the radio. Right, down to the business of news.
Sir Michael Caine has retired. Or has he? He kind of.
Well, okay, so this is where it gets really confusing. I believe he has. However, I think the confusion came in that someone said he has, but then he said he hadn't, or he still had work to do, or I think where we're at with it at time of recording is The Great Escaper, of course, was an absolute... I mean, if that's the last thing he goes out on,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just wow.
Yeah, we spoke about that in last week's show.
Yeah, for sure.
We both loved it. We both thought it was absolutely fantastic. And he is fantastic in it as well.
Yeah, I think that if we play a drinking game, do not take a shot every time Paul says fantastic or I say interesting, because we do not want to be responsible for that kind of liver damage. But anyway, yes, back to Michael Caine. So Sir Michael Caine, I believe, has retired. So he is not making any more movies. However, I think he still might have something else to come out at the beginning.
You think he's got one more film to come out next year?
I think he has. I think that's where the confusion came in, because everyone's like, oh, hang on a minute. He says he's retired, but he's got another film coming out. I think he's done that, maybe? I don't know.
He's maybe not going to be making any more.
But I think he's still got work to be released. But I think from this point, he himself is not making any more, yep, because he's retired. At the age of 90, I think that's fair enough.
Oh, and what a career he's had, honestly. Yeah. What an absolute career. I know that when you go back to the 60s and stuff like Get Carter and Italian Job and Alfie and films like that, I mean, that was obviously his real early explosion into the film industry. And then, you know, classics throughout the years. Dark Knight, obviously, and Nolan's trilogy.
Yeah.
And, he's been in a lot of Nolan films, obviously.
He is. We used to call him Chris Nolan's lucky charm.
Yeah.
He's in everything. And the same with Cillian Murphy as well, of course. But
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And Prestige, of course. He's in Prestige.
Yeah.
Cider House Rules, which, did he win? He won an Oscar for Cider House Rules, didn't he? Am I right in thinking
that? I want to say yeah.
Yeah, I think he did.
Don't quote me.
No, I think he did. But, you know, even the funny little thing, it's all, even like in Dunkirk, where he's the radio operator, isn't he? You know,
yeah.
Even little snippets
like
that.
Yeah, he's up there. He's in there somewhere. He's in there somewhere in Chris Nolan stuff. I love it. Inception as well, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tenet. He was in Tenet as well. Yeah. So Just
Now You See Me. He's very good in Now You See Me.
He's very good in everything.
Yeah, this could be a very long... We're literally just going to name every film Michael Caine has been in that is good. So, unfortunately, we won't be mentioning Jaws 4.
If you go to... I love that story he tells.
It's fantastic,
about
isn't it? It's so good. But, I mean, let's face it. I mean,
I don't remember the film, but I do remember the house it bought me.
Somebody said, have you seen Jaws 4? It's awful. And he said, no, I never saw the film, but I did see the house that it bought my mother.
Something along those lines. So that's... what a retort.
Fantastic, isn't it? It's brilliant.
If you go to, I think it's Oppenheimer. If you go to the Scoreheads episode of, I think it's the Ludwig Göransson episode of Scoreheads. It's on our channel right now. Go check it out. Sean Wilson's incredibly sharp impression of Sir Michael Caine is on
very
the opening
good.
Track.
Very good.
But I kind of feel like we need him on this episode now. But he's real busy working on another thing right now. But check that out as well.
I've just been flicking through his filmography. And, of course, he was Nigel Powers in Austin Powers Goldmember.
What a choice.
What an absolute... Come on in, son. Lay down. You haven't even got a name tag. Judo chop. Judo chop.
Like a baby's arm. Anyway, Sir Michael Caine.
What's his line in that? There's only two things I hate. People that are intolerant of other cultures and the Dutch.
Anyway.
No,
Sir Michael Caine.
Sir Michael Caine.
Enjoy
just,
your retirement, sir. You have more than earned it, and thank you so much for a lifetime of great work.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we had a little bit of a debate about this one, didn't we? Matthew Vaughn has confirmed more Kick-Ass and Kingsman.
Yeah, so he's kind of not doing Kick-Ass over, so I think there are more characters and more worlds to explore within the Kick-Ass universe, which there are. Great comic book, do check it out, Mark Millar and crew. but also Kingsman, because we don't actually have a Kingsman 3. We had a The Kingsman, which was a prequel and a kind of origin as to the Kingsman legacy.
And very good, by the way.
Yeah, but this is... So we're expecting a third in that trilogy.
Yes.
The Taron Egerton trilogy, as I'll call it. That's hopefully coming. And also, we do have another Kick-Ass movie, but not with the current crop of characters.
Well, so it's not going to continue the story of where Kick-Ass 2 left off. But it may or may not feature a character or two from the original couple of films.
Yeah, so it's Kick-Ass adjacent.
Yes.
It's in the Kick-Ass universe. Yes. And then, of course, obviously Kingsman will be the third of the Kingsman trilogy. So,
but that's something to be excited about.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, Matthew Vaughan's hitting it out of the park. Argyle's going to be amazing. We've got two more. You know, we've now got another Kingsman. We've got another Kick-Ass to come. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm in for it. Matthew Vaughan, the king of action comedy.
Let's not get into that because I'm not having it, and I will argue with Matthew Vaughan over it if that's what it takes.
Have you met Matthew Vaughan?
Oh, he's in my phone. No, of course I haven't met Matthew Vaughan.
Watching you try and argue with Matthew Vaughan,
oh, really?
I will actually pay cash to watch.
Do we need to set that up on like one of those pay to watch it on YouTube Live or something?
I'm betting all my money on Matt.
Oh, yeah. No, I bet my money on Matt as well.
The one thing I love about Matthew Vaughan is, aside from being a talented filmmaker, he speaks his truth and does not give a... Yeah. So anyway.
Speaking of sequels, Rian Johnson has confirmed that Knives Out 3 is in the works, and he is working on it as we speak.
The world's most vague update? What did it say?
Oh, he's now that the writer's strike is over, he's working on it, and he's got an idea in his head, and he just basically needs to put it down on paper. But it's coming.
The process has begun.
Rian Johnson has an idea. And other news today.
He's been on the toilet. It's happened. He's moved away from the toilet towards
the
writer's room.
He's lost the feeling in his legs.
Towards the writer's room. There we go. Knives Out 3. Yeah, I'll take... I mean, Knives Out 3, it's a Knives Out story, I guess, isn't it? Knives Out is where it began. But I guess they're Benoit Blanc stories now, aren't they? Miss Marple or... Poirot. So yeah, in that vein. But another one of those with Daniel Craig as Benoit Blanc, who is apparently very happy to play Benoit as often as he's invited. So
is great news, because he is fantastic.
Yeah, let's see more of that. I wish I bought shots.
No, we would not make the end of the show
if I said incredible and you said fantastic. And someone took a shot. If, by the way, please drink responsibly. Don't take a shot every time he says fantastic, or I say incredible, or amazing, now that I think about it, because that would not be drinking responsibly. But the irresponsible thing to do would be to say, if there are any spirit brands out there, the email is michaelmarshproductions@gmail.com. You know what I'm saying? Right.
We like to be positive. It's not a bad thing. We like to be as positive as possible.
Yes, but we also like our livers.
What, with a nice Chianti?
Liver. Yeah, we like to be a cheese grater! There we go.
You've thrown a new trailer into the trailer park and I haven't seen it.
It's Wonka.
Yes, so I've seen the original trailer.
Yes, more of that.
Oh, it's more of that, okay.
Yeah, Timmy Chalamet taking on the role of Willy Wonka.
I like the look of this. I like the look of it.
I'm on the fence for now.
Okay.
I'm a Gmod purist.
So funny enough, I watched that, myself and the children watched that 2-3 weeks ago, something like that, and it still holds up. It's still fantastic. Where do you stand on Johnny Depp and Tim Burton? Oh, did I say it? I don't even know I'm doing it. It's like that tick that you don't even know you've got. Where do you stand on Johnny Depp and Tim Burton? Did you like that or not?
Are we talking about them as a partnership or just that movie?
Just that movie.
It's okay.
Yeah, okay. The Iron Claw, which
now this I'm excited for.
Yes, well, so I am a huge fan of The Bear on Disney Plus in the UK and Hulu in America.
Yeah.
Huge fan of that whole series. So is it Jeremy Allen? Jeremy? Something like that.
You would know. You have the screen. Now you're typing.
Jeremy Allen White. There you go.
There we go.
I knew it was something along those lines. But he's in this, which excites me because I think he's fantastic. I'm so sorry. I'm going to work on this. Now, you're going to give me a complex, aren't you? So he's in this.
No, you're going to give me a very bad liver.
He's in this and he's awful. with Zac Efron. And it's basically, it's about a family of wrestlers. And it's, again, it's based on a true story, who set up their own wrestling incorporation, and they wrestled, and they had a father who was maybe a little bit over the top, as fathers tended to be in the 70s and the 80s.
Is there something you and I need to talk about here? Do I need to give you a couch?
No. My dad was far from over the top. He was the other way. He just, okay. Yeah.
Just yeah, checking.
Just the other way. But no, so, and it's also got, is it Maura or Maura Tierney?
Yes.
Right, okay. And Lily James as well. But it looks really, really great. And they really bulked up for this movie. Like, really bulked up.
Zac Efron did, and obviously he had the haircut.
Yes.
For the time, yeah, to be accurate. But
real
the thing is,
shaggy hair.
But everybody thought on set photos that he was going to be He-Man.
Oh, I can see that. I can see that.
Because obviously there were rumours abound that, well, no, a script had been submitted to Sony for the Masters of the Universe movie. And then we've heard nothing more on that since, by the way. We do know that Kevin Smith's bringing another Masters of the Universe animated show to Netflix, another okay. season of that. But nothing happened about the movie. And then all of a sudden, Zac Efron's on a set on a backlot somewhere looking like He-Man. And everyone went, what? Like thinking that this was what we were going to get. But no, it was for this very true story about this wrestling family, which looks phenomenal. I have to be honest with you. Mm. I am very excited for it. It's from A24 as well. So, yeah, high hopes for it.
That is out on the 22nd of December in America, and the UK date TBC.
TBC, we're still waiting. I think maybe January.
It shouldn't be too long after,
yeah,
should it?
A couple of weeks, I think, for sure.
And then finally, the last one we're going to look at is The Beekeeper.
And so he completes his trilogy of nonsense.
Well, it just... I mean, yes, it looks like another film that is tailored to Jason Statham, so that he can beat lots of people up in a very flimsy plot. So watching the trailer, the one thing that really got me is, again, he's got his transporter accent. Is it American? Is it British? Is it just crap?
This is David Ayer's movie, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I love David Ayer.
No, so what I was going to say is, from watching the trailer, it doesn't look as bad as what The Meg 2 was and Expend 4 Balls.
It's because it's David Ayer.
Yeah, it doesn't look as bad as that. I'll be honest with you, it doesn't look great. It looks very flimsy. It looked like they came up with the title of The Beekeeper before they came up with the rest of the script. And they went, right, how can we make this action movie and let's make him a beekeeper? What? Let's make him a beekeeper. Stop smoking that stuff. Put it down.
So if I get David Ayer on to talk to you about this, and you two can like figure it out.
If you can do that, if you can do that, I will ask him about everything I've just said. I'll ask him.
Right. Okay. So here's the thing with David Ayer. Everybody knows the story. Great, made a great movie called Fury, right?
Oh, superb. I love it.
He got, but on the record, off the record, the rumour is abound that he got really stitched up with Suicide Squad, because the version, yes, of Suicide Squad that's out is not the vision that he had for Suicide Squad. Of course. Yep. If you want to know more about this, there's a really great podcast that John Bernthal does. Johnny Bernthal.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm trying to think of the name. It's something like The Good Ones.
Right.
I want to say The Good Ones. Johnny, I'm so sorry.
The podcast that gets the names wrong.
The podcast that gets the names of podcasts wrong. To the point where now I'm actually going to look at it, because I do actually want to check this out. Because it's amazing, this podcast with Johnny Bernthal. It's really good. But it goes through, it's like not just celebrity guests. There's guests from all walks of life. And I've been listening to it a lot lately and watching it a lot lately, because some of the guests on there have been phenomenal. Johnny Bernthal's podcast is called Real Ones. There we go.
Okay.
It's called Real Ones. Great podcast with John Bernthal. Has all kinds of guests from all walks of life, and I mean literally all walks of life, and it really does a deep dive on life experience. David Ayer was a guest on the Real Ones podcast. It's also on YouTube, so you can watch it as well as a video. And he does a real deep dive on his relationship with Hollywood and Hollywood's relationship with him. Do you know what I mean? That's really interesting viewing, to the point where it made me change my point of view on certain things that surrounded him, because I was like, hang on a minute, this guy's basically been hung out to dry. So I'm kind of more sympathetic towards David now that I have David's point of view, mm-hmm, from David's mouth, yeah, right? And John Bernthal, excellent interviewer.
Yeah, of course.
Brilliant actor.
Yeah.
excellent interviewer. So he really gets into it. But also, not just, like I say, not just David Ayer's episode. Check out all the episodes of Real Ones. They are fantastic. Johnny Bernthal, absolutely love him. I've said fantastic, so now you should drink. So, yeah, so check that out. But if you want more information on David Ayer, David Ayer has made The Beekeeper, which now makes me think, now that I know that it's David Ayer, I'm coming at this from a completely different point of view now, because I'm like, oh, hang on a minute, because David Ayer movies are generally awesome when studios aren't getting involved.
Right. I'll give you a very, again, this is all in the trailer, so I'll give you a very brief overview of the movie. Jason Statham seems to be, he clearly has a former life. If he's going around absolutely beating up 10 guys in a row, he clearly has a former life. However, whatever he's doing now, he is keeping bees. He's keeping them. I want to keep these bees. I don't want them to get away. And he has a very neighbourly neighbour that he gets on very well with, an elderly lady. And she's on a computer. She has spam pop-up. She clicks on the spam pop-up. It takes all of her life savings. And she is so distraught by this, she shoots herself. He is not happy about this, and he goes to find the people that have created this pop-up and take all the things.
Is this not the plot of The Equalizer 3?
Yes, and that's where I was getting to. He then goes and kills all of these people and is going to find his way to the top of the tree. Does this sound at all familiar?
You're a blessing, Mr. Clay. This place was crabgrass and weeds, and you brought it back to life.
Mrs. Parker and I were friends. She was the only person who ever took care of me.
I just got a message saying that there's a problem with my computer.
Yes, ma'am, we got this.
Yesterday, she shot herself.
This is private property.
Do you know what they do here? Scamming the weakest in our society?
Buddy, I'm counting to three.
One, two, three. There, I did it for you.
Here's the plot of Exorcist.
No, it's not the plot of The Exorcist. Let's not go there. We don't need to see Jason Statham's head doing a 360. But it is virtually the plot of...
If you keep bashing Jason Statham on this podcast, he's going to hear it and make your head do a 360.
Listen, Jason Statham makes a lot of great movies. He hasn't made anything good in a year or so.
Could this be the three in the trilogy of nonsense, or could this be the turning point,
the Redeemer,
back towards classic Stath?
I think it is going to be the third of the trilogy, but I'm hoping to be proved wrong.
Okay, well, that's coming to Sky Cinema. It's coming to cinemas and Sky Cinema in January. January?
12th of January.
There we go.
Okay, so looking at what is out in the cinema, we have Christine, the 40th anniversary release. Now, we were talking about this. I haven't seen it.
It's, yeah, John Carpenter's movie based on Stephen King's book, I think.
Yeah.
Very good movie. I enjoyed that. Classic 80s
horror. So I need to watch this, right?
Yeah, for sure. Have you not seen it? It's a Carpenter movie you haven't seen. Get on it.
Yeah, I know. I need to get on that one. A Mystery on Castle Hill Express, Night of the Hunted, Our River, Our Sky, It Lives Inside, Gravity, the 10th anniversary. Is that 10 years old?
Already, I know, right?
Wow. I Know Where I'm Going, 4K restoration, Foe, and Killers of the Flower Moon.
Which is the big one for this week. Martin Scorsese, which is why we have the Tip Top 5 as Martin Scorsese. We will, of course, come back to you when we've seen it.
Very excited about it.
We'll deep dive. There
right,
we go.
Scatman John.
Yeah, Scatman John. I like that. Yeah, I am actually John. Anyway, Flowers of the Killer Moon, that's out in cinemas. We will talk about it on next week's show in great depth, I am sure. Purely because it's like nearly 4 hours by the time you add trailers and things.
Yes.
Yeah, I think with trailers and ads and an interval, it's 4 hours on the bang. So
I'm taking a cushion. I'm taking some comfy seating.
You've got those comfy seats anyway.
Yeah,
we get the best seats. What are you moaning about?
I know. I'm only joshing. I'm just joshing.
You're going to take your blankie?
Yeah.
Take your blankie.
No, that would not be good. If I get too comfortable, I will not make the end of that film.
So you're not under it when the nasty man on the screen does nasty things.
All right, don't get personal.
Flowers of the Killer Moon in cinemas. Martin Scorsese's latest epic, and by many accounts, one of his greatest works, apparently. 5 stars all round from everybody. But will it get 5 stars from us? You can find out on next week's podcast. Cinema reviews now. What have we seen?
We have seen... we've seen a couple of films. We have seen Some Other Hood.
We saw Some Other Hood, which I think I liked more than you did.
I think you liked it more than I did as well. So we're in agreement.
We're in agreement on the fact that I liked it more than you did.
You liked it more than me. Okay, we can all go home now.
So to be clear, for most of this movie, the movie itself was amusing. But what was also amusing was looking over at Paul, and Paul having a demeanour and expression that looked like he was having his toenails and fingernails pulled out at the same time.
Start from the beginning.
Yo, Bizzle, click like it's showtime.
What is it, some type of prank or something?
What's ours first, fam? His watch or his chain?
I don't know, what's worth more peas?
What's worth more peas, fam?
Leave it, yeah?
Seriously, I can explain. When I run into your home. Allow it, painting Alexa, stop the music, fam.
Sorry, fam, click clack.
We're laughing, stop, man.
I'm out here looking for redemption, bruv.
Are you on it or not?
Yeah, I'm on it, cuz. We're gonna get some more soldiers. I'm gonna call my man them, innit?
I ain't got time for your CBBC man in blood. This time, we do something that's gonna finally put us on the map.
Give me everything you got! Pounds, 10p's, 5p's, and even the brown pennies!
You want the pennies?
How much longer is this gonna take?
So hard is my mantra.
Rico and Kane, bang bang, all day, midday.
Man said all day, midday. I love that.
Right, I wanna preempt this by saying, from the trailer, I was really, really looking forward to it. Big fan of previous films. Big fan of... I mean, the fact that there's a Friday poster up in the opening scene tells you what you're walking into, okay? And I'm a huge fan of Friday, next Friday, not so much Friday after next because it's not very good. So I was really, really looking forward to this. Big fan of 90% of the people that are in this movie.
Okay.
So that's like, so I didn't go into it with a negative mindset.
That's true. I will back you on that. Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to be a 5 out of 5. I thought it would be a solid 3. I was hoping for a 4.
Okay.
That was where I was at.
Okay. That's how you came into this.
Yeah.
So this is Adam Deacon's sequel to Anotherhood from 2011, I want to say, 2012.
Ooh.
This was around the... This was Fruit Teller is a Bad Man Suite.
Yeah, 2011. Yeah, 2011.
That literally went viral, didn't it? Mm. Fruit Teller is a Bad Man Suite.
But it is.
Was that from Another Hood? It was from
it
Another
is.
Hood. Yeah.
I mean, it is a Bad Man Suite.
I mean, it's obviously recycled in this movie. But yeah, so that in and of itself... Now, what I like about these movies is that Adam is very clearly, as director and star, is very clearly lampooning the... Not necessarily the grime scene, but this genre of film,
mm-hmm. yeah.
gangster films,
yeah.
you know, like I say, I know, for anyone that has no idea, go and check out Another Hood because that is exceptionally funny. But he plays Rico, which is one half of Rico and Kane. Click,
yes.
clack.
Click,
click,
clack.
Click, clack. Click, clack,
Rico
fam.
Rico and Kane.
Click, clack, fam. And so they are aspiring. In obviously, the other movie does something completely different. But in this movie, we find them. We're caught up with them, and they are in trouble because they owe a local, what seems very local, drug lord $15,000. I think it was that they need to raise
15, yeah, something like 12, something like that. Anyway, a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Yeah,
for things that they've
partook in.
Not even that. I think they just... It's a comedy of errors, isn't it? Because essentially they just balls everything up.
They lose a lot of things.
They are. And this is where if you look at this movie from a certain point of view, you kind of understand it more. They are essentially the Laurel and Hardy of like the South London scene, right? Well, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they are the Laurel and Hardy. I kind of feel like they're like Peckham, Laurel and Hardy. That kind of... Do you know what I mean?
I do,
so,
yeah, yeah.
Like this comedy of errors, this comedy duo, it works at its best when they're failing at their hardest.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's funny, because they are the big men in their heads. And in Adam Deacon's character's case, Rico, quite literally, because he is... We talk a lot more about his bipolar disorder as well. That kind of gets dug into a little bit. Sometimes it's used... It's interesting how his character is... defined by that, and he actually sort of turns it into a superpower, doesn't he, in
yeah.
a way?
Yep.
So that's interesting, because I've always said,
don't
the same.
Mess with me, I've got bipolar.
Yeah, exactly. And we always talk about, like, my, you know, ADHD and everything else, and how we always teach that it's a superpower, not a disability. So to see that actually used as a superpower was really interesting. But yes, yeah, so they're constantly in trouble. They need to find £15,000, and they need to find it a bit sharpish. So they go through a gauntlet of upward failings to try and find this money in time, one of which is trying to rob Lethal Bizzle at gunpoint, which is hilarious. And that
leave it, yeah.
Allow it though, fam. Yeah, so there's lots of stuff going on there that is quite amusing and that is quite funny. But then of course this leads them from being in their little flat trying to figure out how they're going to find 15 grand all the way up to being literal boss men who are in one of London's hardest firms, because by series of misunderstandings, Rico ends up like the hottest assassin in town by accident. And so is our comedy of errors. This is a film that very much points fun at those gangster comedy. Friday's probably the best example in that it is a comedy, situational comedy, and this is really kind of British Friday, isn't it?
It's certainly a wannabe bit British Friday, yeah.
Yeah, so when you take that on faith, and bearing in mind you factor in things like you weren't a fan of this because you said it was just basically him inviting all his mates round. But
so we spoke about this, was it last week, the week before, something like that? We spoke about Adam Sandler basically making every third movie or something like that, basically finding whatever script he can get his hands on, inviting a load of mates to hang out for 3 months, making a film, having the time of their lives, and they don't overly care about how good it is because they've had a great time for the last 3 months. In my opinion, that's how this film came across.
Yeah, so he brings in some famous friends, and there's lots of famous cameos as well. None of which, we're not going to ruin them because they are.
There's a lot in the trailer, obviously, isn't there?
I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't even go into that. It's quite nice. I've had a few people that go and sit and hadn't seen the trailer, and they were pleasantly surprised by everything. Obviously, the most obvious and famous one is Ed Sheeran because he's kind of heavily promoted as part of that. And to be honest, for the brief part that he is in the movie, he's hilarious.
I completely disagree.
Yeah, so I thought that was quite funny because they just took that and turned it on his head. He's perfect for that part because it's like this is what would happen if Ed Sheeran had fallen so low that he was literally using bushes as a toilet.
So I think Dave Chappelle's character in Friday.
Yeah, so that, but Ed Sheeran's doing that. Yeah. And again, I get that reflects on your comparisons to Friday and whatnot. For the most part, it's got a great cast. For the most part, it's very funny. I did really find it funny. I did laugh a lot. Like I said, on two levels, at the film and at you, because you were just becoming more and more disapproving.
I can't go round every single cinema sitting and hating it so that other people can laugh at me hating it.
The more upset you were getting with it, the more funnier that made it for me. Anyway, so that it was funny on those levels. It very much feels like something that should have been on BBC Three with a bigger budget. It's BBC Three comedy on a bigger budget, I think, to a big screen. Quite literally, where I kind of feel like they spent a certain amount of money on the movie, and then right that little end bit of the last 5 minutes, it almost felt like, we've got all this money left. Should we use it on that?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We won't say why, but anyway, yeah, so there's that. That felt a bit tacked on, and the only thing I can think of is, oh, we haven't used all our money.
Yeah.
How can we use all this nice Paramount money? So yeah, for the most part, it's funny, in the same way I find these kinds of British urban comedies funny on BBC Three, for example, in the same way that I find things like Friday funny. But this is it's British Friday, essentially. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's fun. Has it caused some of the most terrible performances I've ever seen? Probably. But is that by design? This is the balance you must strike. Sometimes it's by design for the comic effect. It's fairly well shot. It's fairly well put together. The story is an absolute nonsense, but then that's the point. It's supposed to be nonsense. Is it just, as I keep saying, a non-stop comedy of errors where these two... It's like, how far can these two fall and how much can they cock up to hilarious effect? And that's where I think it works. I quite like the cameos. Again, that feels very much like a BBC Three comedy show. I quite like that. That works for me. But on the whole, I quite enjoyed it. I laughed, I thought it was funny, it's all right, and I move on to the next thing. It's kind of like that. So for me, I'm sort of leaning in the late two, early three out of five.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Right, shall we talk about Trolls?
Oh, wow. He's leant back. He's held back.
Well, I can either move on to Trolls or I can say what I want to say. It's up to you.
Well, this is the part where you say your part. So you need to say your part.
Okay, right. I'll keep this as brief as possible. It's not good. It's not good at all. There are... do you know what? The one thing that I really do want to say is... I apologise, I'm going to get this name wrong, and I apologise now. Jazzy Zonzolo, who is Kane, right?
Oh, superb.
Jazzy Zonzolo is fantastic throughout this entire movie, and I want him to go on to do more things because I thought this guy was great.
Yeah, fantastic.
I thought he was superb.
Oh, they got
me at it. Not to say Adam Deacon wasn't, but I thought Adam Deacon played his part well, which is what he did. But I thought Jazzy was fantastic, and I think I want to see more of him in films in the future. So that's my real positive spin on this because, yeah, I thought it was great.
Okay. Do you want to just get to the other stuff?
I thought that there are other actors in this movie that were also great. When there are real actors in this movie, they are great. Now, like you said, I'm not going to reveal names because I don't want to spoil anything, but there are British actors who are incredibly well known that are in this movie. They're in it for a maximum of 10 minutes for each scene, and they are fantastic and they just are great in it. So that's all there is to that. The storyline is turd, but like you said, it's meant to be turd. You lean into that. The cameos that are not actors are awful. Shockingly bad, out of place, don't fit the film, just throwing them in there because they're a mate or a big name, don't work, don't do it. It was just a major disappointment. And like I said, you know, you have Friday, which is a 5-star classic. You have Next Friday, which is probably a 3.5, maybe if you want to be generous, a 4 out of 5. And then you have Friday After Next, which is awful. This is without a shadow of a doubt the Friday After Next of the series because it's just bad. And unless you are a big fan of Adam Deacon and this type of film, you will not like this film.
Show me on the screen where Jeremy Corbyn touched you.
Again, that was just a... So that's a pointless cameo that's just bad in the film and it just doesn't work. It just really doesn't. Anyway, let's move on to Trolls. I'll give it a 2 out of 5 because there were a couple of humorous moments and some of the acting is very good, so I'll give it a 2 out of 5.
Oh, that's very generous. Okay, so he's 2 out of 5, I'm 3 out of 5.
Either
so,
way, there's like...
So somewhere between a 2 and a 3, yeah, is what we're giving to Some Other Hood. That's got a 15 certificate, is in UK cinemas, and at some point it'll be in theatres, I'm sure, as well.
Coming to a bargain bin near you.
Oh, he's so unhappy. Who stole your porridge? Anyway.
They took the jam out of your tart.
Who put 50p in you? Right, so on to Trolls then. Trolls Band Together. Now, that drops into cinemas as of Friday the 20th of October. You and your wonderful family went and saw that well in advance. I quite enjoyed it. But it's your review, so
right. Okay.
Go for it.
I feel like every time I come on to do something, I just slag it off. I really do. But
Trolls Band Together. Tell me about it.
So, right, it's about Branch, who of course is the mainstay of all of these films. It's been discovered that when he was a baby, he was in a boy band, a man band, whatever you want to call it, troll band, boy band, super group called Brozone. With his brothers.
Of course they were.
Of course they were. Of course they were, sweetheart. And then one of his brothers is kidnapped by a new pop duo who are using the Floyd, who's the brother who gets kidnapped. They're using his power to turn themselves into superstars because he has the talent and they don't have the talent, and they're using all of his power. And that is as flimsy as the storyline gets.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to
stop the wedding!
I'm John Dory, Branch's long lost brother.
What?
Drama. Calling me Dinkle.
You're the guy from Brozone. We were just listening to them.
Brozone's back. All right.
Ready or not, we are gonna stay alive.
Baby Branch.
But that's all in the past.
Branch, how come you never told me you had a secret brother?
Correction. Used to be my brother. My brothers walked out on me and never came back.
Branch, we're out of sync. We've gone from boys to men, and now there's only one direction for us to go. The back streets.
Branch, it's time we find the rest of our brothers and get the band back together.
Brozone!
We're gonna have the best family reunion ever. Brozone 2.0. Brozone reunion. Brozone, here we bro again. Brozone, where'd they bro? I don't know. We're gonna find them!
They, in my, this, now again, so this is only my opinion, and I think we'll hear a little bit more from, like, somebody who's a little bit more educated than me very, very shortly. But I think that the idea of this film probably came around when somebody pitched to Justin Timberlake, how would you like to get to back together with NSYNC to do a song and we'll base a movie around it? And he went, yeah, that sounds like a good laugh.
Okay.
There is no way that this film was written before NSYNC Better Together came together. There's no way. It doesn't happen. They came to him and said, how about we do this? We get you guys back together and we will literally write a film around it. The plot is so thin, it's worse. It's like crepe paper thin. It literally would just fall apart. But it's a kid's film at the end of the day. It's a kid's film at the end of the day.
Sorry, so just to interject, is this your theory? This isn't the. This is
no.
Actually
I have
happened.
Actually no concrete evidence of this whatsoever. This is just my theory.
So how long do you think NSYNC have been back together?
I think this has probably been in the plans for a year, maybe even longer than that. I don't know how long it takes to make one of these things. Probably about
3 to 4. Just, yeah. So no.
No.
Okay. I spoke to Walt Dawn, the director.
Exactly.
Let's cut to the interview. No.
Exactly. I'm sure Walt will know far more than me. It's only what I think. I think that, because let's face it, if you take this movie without the NSYNC reunion,
it's the Simpsons paradox.
Yeah, there you
Everyone
go.
Everyone says that yep. Matt is a time traveller.
Yep, there you go.
Everyone says that Matt is a time traveller because he's predicted all these things in the Simpsons. Just to spin that on its head, did he predict all these things? Is he a time traveller? Did he predict all these things in the Simpsons ahead of time, using the Simpsons as the predictor, like Nostradamus Simpsons? Or people like Donald Trump and everybody else that, you know, are involved in the events that happened in The Simpsons later on down the line, did they watch The Simpsons and then go, you know what, that's not a bad idea? So what I'm saying is, when Justin Timberlake was brought in to work on the script, to be part of the movie, to read the script, to voice capture, to get involved with the production of the film, this is me theorising now, not the truth, did he not think, this would be really good if we got NSYNC back together? What I'm saying is, one thing, you're not necessarily wrong in that one thing can inspire the other, but often people get it the wrong way around. It's not like, is this guy that made The Simpsons a time traveller? It's, is it just that he wrote those up as completely bonkers scenarios, and the people that he wrote them about in the cartoon went, actually, that's not a bad idea. I think I'll give that a go.
So what I would like to know is that if NSYNC, if one member of NSYNC decided to say no, what would have happened? Would they have got a boy band together of the best of the Backstreet Boys and O-Town and Take That and whatever else and thrown them together as a...
No idea, but...
So it's so reliant on this bro zone.
Yeah,
you know,
but
this
then
boy
that's
band
boy zone,
together.
That's boy zone,
yeah,
that's
and
Westlife.
Yeah, there's a lot of jokes in there, not more about American boy bands than British boy bands, but there's a lot of jokes in there about that, and they're all very clever and very well done. But it's just so flimsy. There's just, I mean, I know I can't believe I'm saying this about Trolls 3, but there's no plot line. The plot line is literally one sentence, and that is it. And everything else that happens in between for the next hour and a half is just... I don't think that the songs are as catchy as they were in the first or second, which were both great films in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that this will have the longevity of the first and second films. You know, again, I've got a young family. We watch these types of films all the time.
Yep.
And I don't think that we will be putting Trolls Band together on as much as we did the first two.
Okay, but did they enjoy it?
That being said, they loved it. Yeah, that being said, they both came out of it, really, really enjoyed it, as did my wife, by the way. She really, really enjoyed it as well. Mm-hmm. So I think if you want a fun, humorous little cartoon for your kids to go and watch, there'll be some music in there that you'll know, there'll be some music in there that you don't know, but overall fun, enjoyment, etc. Don't, I mean, at the end of the day, it's Trolls 3. You're not going to expect too much from this film, are you? You know, it's not everything has to be tar. You're not going to expect a lot from this film, but don't expect for a lot from this film, and you might get something out of it.
So ultimately, middle-aged man doesn't like children's film.
Okay. I've been thinking about this.
Middle-aged man does not like children's movie. Is that the top line?
The top line, but let me throw at you Super Mario Brothers. Let me throw at you Mitchell's versus the Machines. There have been some phenomenal animation movies released in the last year or two that mean that things like this don't have to be this bad. You should not have to go and watch a family movie with your children and sit through gritted teeth. There are so many great animation movies out there that, they're upping their game now.
You sit through Emmerdale Farm gritting your teeth.
I do not watch Emmerdale Farm, and nobody's called it Emmerdale Farm in 20 years.
Exactly, which proves I don't watch it either.
No, neither do
okay,
I.
Okay, so how
Emmerdale
we look
Farm,
at,
Matt,
I know. Well, I know for a fact that Joe Shirley's done a phenomenal score for Trolls, though. Joe Shirley. He's not old at all. He's very young, actually. For some great composition, great score there as well. He of Creed 3 and so on. He's having a great year, to be honest. He did, of course, score other Trolls films. There we go. We got there in the end.
Can we not do that?
Animation,
can we,
CGI.
For the rest of the podcast, can we take a whole sentence and squash it down into one word?
Just scrolls.
Scrolls.
Scrolls. Yeah. Joe scores Trolls. It's scrolls, apparently. Yeah. He's done a great job there. Animation all looks crisp and tip-top and all together.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. From that type of... My real main and only bug with it is the storyline.
So we're back in that place where I'm leaning into a 3 and you're leaning into a 2.
Probably. Yeah, probably.
It's fun, it's upbeat, it's happy, it's foot tapping. It's the thing you need to entertain your children on a rainy day.
I think the same...
And also, it will lift their spirits.
I think the same thing about this is what I've literally just spoke about with Some Other Hood. I think all of the fantastic actors and actresses in this movie have decided that they have enjoyed themselves so much on the last two that they'd do this regardless of anything. They'll get a payday and they'll have fun while they're doing it and they'll move on to the next one.
So miserable.
Listen, I want to like these movies. I really, really do. And the proof will be in the pudding. Seriously, if you're still talking about this in 6 months, I'll hold my hand up and go, I'm completely wrong. I'll lay my house on it that you're not.
Well, there probably will be because it'll be on like streaming and stuff. So
but even though
it
will not, I just don't think it will stream well.
Anyway, Trolls Band Together, that is in cinemas and theatres from Friday. It might already be in theatres around the world, but it's definitely coming to the UK this Friday. What's your final score?
2.5.
2.5.
And I know, I'm sorry.
2.5. Okay. In which case, then, if you want something positive, life-affirming, upbeat, and just to make you feel generally happy, you can watch that movie. Or you can listen right now to the director of the film, who's already switched off because he only got about 3 sentences into Paul's review of it, and he's probably very unhappy. Walt Dawn, I apologise to you. You are a guest on our podcast, and you've been treated horrifically by one of your hosts. However, the host that didn't treat you horrifically was me that got to interview you. Walt Dawn, director of Trolls Band Together, I caught up with him to talk more about the film and get inside what it is to make a Trolls movie. John Brown here with you, and I'm super excited to welcome onto the show now the director of Trolls Band Together, Walt Dawn. Walt, how are you, sir?
I am doing well. This is so much fun. I love talking about the movie.
It's a fun movie. Thank you so much for joining us as well to talk all about it. It's the latest installment, of course, in the feverishly popular movie series that everybody loves. Tell us all about where we find our friends in this latest film and what can we expect from the new movie, Walt?
Well, there is... I love talking about the movie, but it's so hard because there is so much in this film. I always kind of start at the kind of the seed of the idea, which is we learn at Branch, the Justin Timberlake troll, he has 4 brothers that he's never talked about. We didn't even know about it. In fact, when Branch was a baby, he and his brothers were in a band together. It was called Brozone. Yes, that's right, Brozone. So in this one of the brothers is kidnapped by this nefarious and very funny villains played by Andrew Reynolds and Amy Schumer. So one of the brothers named Floyd, who's played by Troye Sivan, is kidnapped. So that means Branch and Poppy have to get the brothers back together, get the band back together, and save the kidnapped brother.
I love this. You have such a great voice cast for these films as well. This one's no different, of course. I think, did you mention everybody just there? I mean, walk us through your brilliant cast. And also, who are our new additions for this? You mentioned a few new additions there as well for this particular installment.
Oh, yeah. The cast is so wild and so big. I mean, Branch's brothers alone. We've got Eric Andre plays Branch's oldest brother, John Dory. There's another brother named Spruce. He's played by David Diggs, who's so fantastic in Hamilton and so many other things. We've got Kid Cudi is a brother named Clay, who is hilarious in this. We've been wanting to work with him for a while. And lastly, like I said, Lloyd is played by Troy Sivan, who is just dreamy, let's just say it. Who else do we have? Yeah, Amy Schumer, Andrew Reynolds are villains. We've got Camila Cabello is in the film, who is such a joy. She was so playful and so much fun. And we've got also returning characters. We've got Kenan Thompson is back as Tiny Diamond, who has a very big role this time around and who's unbelievably funny. I mean, I had to stop myself from laughing because I was ruining the takes. I was ruining his takes. It was such a huge cast. And there's even more, you know.
What's your favorite part of the directing process, Walt?
That's a good question. There are so many things to enjoy. I think along those lines, I mean, first of all, I love working with the music. It is a personal, I'm not a musician, but I play very poorly like 20 different instruments. I love music. I live and breathe music as a fan, and I like to play it too. So that's very special to me. But I think the best thing about directing, especially a Trolls movie, is that I get to work with such a diverse range of artists. You know, one day I'm working with the choreographers, you know, choreographing some boy band piece of music, and the next day I'm working with painters and trying to find how we make these worlds new, and then sitting with the musicians and with the animators. I think it's just the breadth and diversity of the artists I get to work with.
A film of this size and scale as well requires such a huge team, right? The voice cast, of course, bringing the characters to life is one thing, but just how many folks behind the scenes does it take to make a film of this caliber come to life?
Oh, so many. I'd say at the least, at one point, we have over 500 people working on the film. It is such a huge production. You know, it starts really small with a handful of us. And as we're working on it, because I was on this movie for 4 years. We start bringing people on after that first year where I develop it with our producer, Gina Shea. So 3 years of production. So we start bringing on more and more people as we get richer with the movie itself. So I'd say over 500 people at least.
I have to ask you, which of the trolls would you say that you most relate to or are most like? And in answering that, also, which one would you most like to be?
I think they're one and the same. I'd say I definitely relate to Poppy. I'm a very much Poppy. I think in this world, you're either a Poppy or a Branch. And although I have my Branch days, I think for the most part, I'm Poppy, because this idea of the power of optimism, I definitely believe in. You know, being optimistic every day, it's how we got this film made. Like I said, 4 years of working every day to make sure it's the best it can be. You have to be optimistic. So that's me. I'm a Poppy.
And these films are such a joy for kids and big kids alike. What is it about the Trolls franchise that you feel keeps audiences coming back for more?
There are a number of elements. I think number one, it's the music. The music is so special in these films. And again, music is so important in all of our lives. And it's such a part of what we do. Music is ubiquitous. Everywhere we go, we're in the car, we're at the dentist, we're at the fairgrounds. Like everywhere we go, there is music, and it communicates an emotion or an idea. So the music is huge in this. And I think ultimately, even though they're trolls and it's a wild, weird, wacky world, these movies are about the human experience. They are so relatable what the trolls are going through, you know, from really kind of personal issues, even in my own life that are in these films. But really, again, everything we deal with as humans, that's the experience the trolls have. And I think that's what makes it so connective to whether you're young or old or everywhere in between.
Which leads perfectly onto my last question, which is, what do you hope audiences will take away from seeing your film come release time?
I mean, I definitely hope they are a little bit happier coming out of the theater than they were going in. So hopefully spreading happiness, spreading joy, you know, getting these songs in their head, but I think also just this sense of connectivity, feeling a little like looking at the world a little bit differently, you know, seeing the sunshine a little bit more, feeling the love of being a person and being in a family and feeling connected to our fellow human beings. Is that a lot? Is that too ambitious? What do you think, John?
I think that's perfect. Exactly what we should take away from that. Well, it's been a huge pleasure. Thank you so, so much for your time. Congratulations on the film and hope it's a huge success for you all. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
I'm sorry, Walt. I'm sorry. I'm sure that, you know, he didn't write the script. Did he? Let me check.
Anyway, Walt Dawn there, director of Trolls Band Together. Thank you, Walt, for your time. I really appreciated
spending time with you. Thank you.
I appreciated you and I appreciate your movie. Thank you for entertaining us and particularly the small people in our lives. That movie's out now. Okay, we shall move on to what's next. That's if Paul's not here and he's not gone for a good cry. Show me on the diagram where the children's movie touched you.
Be careful about that. Move on quickly. Streaming. Right. So streaming, we have got Loki Season 2, which is underway on Disney Plus.
Yeah, that's doing well. Weekly episodes.
Once Upon a Studio, which I'm really looking forward to watching. Is it kind of like a
short,
but like a documentary short, because they've brought back Robin Williams for that, right?
Yes, I need to be very clear, because now you've brought that up, I need to clarify a few things. Not using AI.
No, so this is not.
Voice record. This is takes from Aladdin.
Yes, so they've
been
used
heard.
All of his outtakes from the original Aladdin recordings.
Well, not all of them.
No, definitely not all of them, knowing Robin Williams. I read a fantastic story about him the other day where they had to employ somebody on Mork and Mindy that spoke something like six languages because he kept trying to sneak swear words in foreign languages onto the show.
That's amazing.
Brilliant, right? Absolutely. That's brilliant. Amazing. What a legend Robin Williams is.
I love the one about part of his contract is that homeless people would come and work
on
the film.
Yep, brilliant.
And they would be offered employment and that would be part of his condition. He was such a beautiful soul.
Yes.
Right.
So, yeah, Once Upon a Studio on Disney Plus. The Long Shadow continuing on ITVX, which is absolutely amazing. I have seen that one. It's superb. Fraser makes its comeback on Paramount Plus.
Nicholas Lyndhurst is in it as well.
Exactly, yeah. Very interesting. They actually put the whole of the first episode on YouTube or something like that.
They did. There were two episodes came out to start the show. It's weekly Fridays on Paramount Plus and only on Paramount Plus.
So I'm a big fan of the original series and Cheers, so I'll definitely be trying to watch that as well. Old Dads is another one on Netflix. Bill Burr and Bokeem Woodbine. Is that a series or a stand-up comedy or what's that?
It might be a movie.
Because I love Bill Burr. Love Bill Burr.
Oh, yeah, you and Bill Burr get on.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So that's right up my street. I'll be looking for that one. Silver Dollar Road is on Amazon Prime. Scream 6 coming to Paramount Plus on Saturday. On Saturday, the 21st of October.
Take your time!
Which we agree is a fantastic movie up until the last 20 minutes.
Stop saying fantastic, it hurts my soul.
All right, it's a great movie up until the last 20 minutes. Hot Potato, the story of the Wiggles, is coming to Amazon Prime on the 24th of October. Currently out on Netflix, however, is The Fall of the House of Usher. The latest from Mike Flanagan.
And the composers, the Newton Brothers, who are coming on Scoreheads to talk all about it. But yeah, you reviewed it, so go.
I have mentioned on more than one occasion that I absolutely love Mike Flanagan. I think what he does is just amazing. I really, really do. We've spoke together about our love for Dr. Sleep.
Which is
the Shining sequel, which is amazing. And he released something like six series and movies via Netflix or something along those lines.
Yeah, he's been working very, very hard.
So like his entire back catalogue is on Netflix if you want to go and watch it. And in my opinion, Haunting on Hill House, is the pick of the bunch. It is.
Call yourself a fan?
No, I don't at all. that is literally 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10, 100% possibly the best horror TV series I've ever seen in my entire life. It's amazing. The Fall of the House of Usher is based on Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven.
course it is.
Yes.
Yes.
And that becomes very apparent as you get through the series. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about this. I sat down to watch it Friday night at 9 o'clock, and I thought to myself, I'm going to watch one episode of this. Each episode is around about 55 minutes, something like that. And I thought, I'm going to watch one episode.
Nope.
Midnight, I went to bed. Three episodes later, I watched about another two or three episodes Saturday night, and then I finished it all off on Sunday night. And it's great. It's really, really good. What I love about Mike Flanagan and this is the fact that he uses kind of 90% of the same actors throughout all of his thing, and he keeps a very tight unit, isn't it? Including, I didn't realise, his own wife.
Yes, that's true. And, of course, his composers, the Newton Brothers.
Yes, he's stuck with him throughout. Very, very much the same team throughout. So, Carla, is it Gugino?
Yes.
Carla Gugino is just amazing in this. So good. Henry Thomas reappears, Rahul Kohli, Zach Guilford, many, many others. Many, many others all the way through. Mark Hamill's in this. Mark Hamill's really, really good. It's excellent. Look, listen, if you've loved anything you've seen from Mike Flanagan, watch this. I promise you, you'll absolutely love it. It gets it doesn't get a 5 out of 5, but it certainly gets a 4.5 out of 5.
Well, it's telly. You can go out 10 if you want.
Okay, 9 then. 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10 for TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, works. Okay.
It's great.
That's very respectable score.
Really, really good.
Fall of the House of Usher, that's on Netflix now. 9 out of 10, or in the case of Stars, if we're going with Stars, it's 4 out of 5. 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works about right. Thank you very much for that, Paul. That's your streaming review. And where are we at next, my friend?
So, speaking of VOD, Video On Demand, a movie that I saw a couple of weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, something like that, is now available to be purchased. And that is Mindset, which is a movie about a couple who are going through a bit of a tough period. They're hitting a bit of a lull. And they're not being particularly nice to each other, which kind of happens when you're in a relationship and you go through a bit of a lull. So they seek other opportunities. They seek other opportunities elsewhere. And that's both in love and professional and everything else like that. It's a good movie. It's a very, how can I put this? One minute you're high, the next minute you're low. It'll have you laughing. It'll have you crying. As you are about to hear in my interview, it has, I will say, the worst sex scenes any movie has ever had in the entire history of movies. Even worse than the likes of Showgirls and things like that. The sex scenes in this are bad. They're designed to be bad, but they are bad on purpose. Because let's face it, all right, maybe not, you know, night after night after night, but we've all had that sex issue and something has gone desperately
wrong.
Where
are you going with this?
It's funny.
It seems revelatory.
No.
Stay with it. I want to know more.
It's fine. We've all had that. I don't know.
Have we?
We've all had the issue where you can't get the condom on, or. It's, you know, let's face it, when you've been with someone for a while, sex isn't always romantic, and they show that side of it. And it's very funny. Very funny.
Okay.
But there are also incredibly heartbreaking moments throughout as well. So, Mindset is out on VOD, and I caught up with director Mikey Murray and stars Steve Oram and Ailish Cahill. It's Paul Marsh, and I am delighted to say that I have been joined by the director and the cast of a late film that is coming out very soon, and it is so good. It's called Mindset, and I have been joined by the director, Mikey Murray. I've been joined by Ailish Cahill, who plays Lucy, and Steve Oram, who plays Paul. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey.
Hello.
How are you all doing?
Yeah, good.
Are we all very excited for the film to be released and the public to be able to see it?
Yeah, ecstatic.
Yeah.
Mikey, if I can ask you first, I just want to double check. This is your first feature-length film, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yes. My debut feature as writer, director and producer.
So no pressure then. How are you feeling?
I feel pretty good about it. It's the film that I wanted to make. It's turned out the way I wanted it to, and I'm delighted.
Oh, brilliant. Well, I can say that this film will take you high, it will take you low, it will take you everywhere you could possibly imagine. It's funny, it's sad, it's heartbreaking, it's hilarious. and everything in between. Congratulations. I just think it's fantastic. So looking at Paul and Lucy, and generally all of the characters, to be completely honest with you, at some point or another, they're all really, really awful people, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
I think they all have their demons and their issues.
Yes. They awful behave. Like,
yes.
Awful people.
But then obviously as the film progresses, the more we get to know them, the more we understand their problems and their issues that they have.
Yes. And the way everything unfolds, this is why I keep accidentally spoiling the movie, but the way everything unfolds is that you keep things dawn on you that inform what happened before.
Yeah.
It's hard to talk about without ruining the movie.
Obviously, Lucy, she suffers with depression. She doesn't always handle it very well either.
No, it does her best.
And how was it working with Peter Bancole as well, who plays Daniel?
Wonderful. He's very positive spirit, and he believes so deeply in, expressive art and cinema and the power of these things that, I don't know, it's infectious and you like doing things with him, you know. He's lovely, right?
Working with Peter, it was the first. I actually, the first time I met him was just shortly before we started shooting it, and I could tell by Shoriel that he was on the money in terms of his ability as an actor as well. So, but you just hope that when you meet the actor in person, that they're going to be someone that you can work with. And he was. He was just like so giving and warm with everyone on the set, and just an absolute joy to work with.
Well, the scene with Daniel and Lucy in the hotel is hilariously cringeworthy, I think I'll say. In fact, I think that this film it could set a record for the worst sex scenes in a film, possibly other than, I don't know, Showgirls or something like that. I'm not sure, but there are some awful sex scenes this film. What were they like to film?
I mean, I want to say, like, really wild, it was just a lovely set where Mikey did so many genius things. He won't take credit for this, but made it so easy to just be Lucy. So he didn't really think, like, oh, we're shooting this horrible sex scene that's going to make my friends want to throw up, which I'm so proud of. But it just felt like, I don't know, it felt like Lucy. And it was sad and exciting, you know, and whatever. There are so many moments in that scene. So I just remember feeling a lot of anticipation about finally getting to have sex with Peter, and then, you know, everything else that ensues.
Steve.
And also, you say that these are really bad, horrible sex scenes, but I've personally had worse.
We should shoot reenactments of your worst sex scene moments.
Well,
no one needs to see that, Eilish.
I think, well, this is the thing. So I think everybody has had a bad sex experience, but the funny thing is about this film is they seem to all be in one film. You've taken something that happens maybe once every 10 years or something like that and put it in an hour and a half film. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, well, I now want to hear Steve's worst sex story as well now. So,
my worst sex, in a film,
or in real life?
In real life, no, I couldn't possibly say. But yeah, I've never done as much wanking in a film ever. It was really. I think it's about four separate. It says a lot about Mikey, really, doesn't it?
Thanks for that.
And unfortunately, Steve, you're not in the least bit sexy in this film, are you?
Oh, come on.
I think he is.
Did you enjoy wearing the Y fronts?
I loved it, yeah, because every man feels good in them, really, because they're comfortable, and the white really goes well with my pale legs and that. It's quite a nice combination. I think Mikey planned that very well.
Yeah, well, I thought Y fronts would be the best because we had to keep Steve in check.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I have to ask, are there outtakes?
Yeah, there probably are somewhere.
And will they ever see the light of day?
No, they won't, no.
No. Oh, I would probably pay good money to see those bloopers and those outtakes, because
I would too.
I can imagine that they are absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, well, we don't want people putting them in their wank bank, you know, so.
Well, like I say, Steve's a good-looking man in the film. He's certainly playing the part.
Thank you very much, yeah.
Steve, I have to ask you, actually, with regards to your character in the film, I assume that you followed the Mark Wahlberg diet and workout regime.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Just eating loads of crap food, yeah. And I wanted to really embody an out-of-work writer that just stays at home the whole time. So I put a lot of work into that.
I'm laughing and joking about this, and this is what I mean about the whole film, about the highs and the lows and everything else like that. These scenes are hilariously funny, and then, you know, we find out that Paul really suffers from agoraphobia.
Yeah. Yeah. It's everything you see. I think everything you see in the film is very truthful and has sort of a bit of sadness to it. And you almost feel guilty for laughing at him, don't you, a little bit? But that's partly because of, so we sort of played them for laughs, really, didn't we? All the sort of tennis, trying to go outside, doing the silly tennis kind of things. And I mean, it's just, yeah, anyway, yeah. It's they're both damaged and sad people, really, aren't they?
But the thing is, the other thing that I love about this film is, one thing that you see in a lot of films, a lot of films like to spoon feed you, don't they? And Paul has agoraphobia, and this is why he has it. Lucy has depression, and this is why she has it. There's no reference to either of those whatsoever, because that's life, right? Sometimes you'll meet people with any of these mental issues that they have, and there's no backstory explaining why they have it. It's just they have it, and this is what they have to deal with.
Well, sometimes there is no why, you know, it's just a chemical imbalance or whatever, you know, it's just like, is that the why, I guess, but no one needs to talk about that. It's just, you know, it's more about who these people are than, you know, the things that are ailing them.
Mm. And also, I think this sort of, again, there's no real reference to how long Paul and Lucy have been together, but they've definitely hit that rough patch in their relationship that I think a lot of people go through at some point in their lives, where you settle in and you stop trying and you take things for granted and all of that kind of thing. So I really thought that it captured all of that perfectly.
Thank you.
Steve, I know you've done a lot. Is it difficult to put different hats on, whether you're obviously as an actor, as a writer, as a director? Now, you're acting in this one. Was it difficult to take that director hat off?
No, not at all, no. I mean... I think I've probably worked most as an actor, and that's something I do all the time, really. So it was when you get to work on a script like that, it's just a joy, because, you know, it's so rounded and so full, and it's a passion project, and it's a complete character, and so it's, you don't think about anything else. I wasn't like sitting there going thinking about Mikey doing stuff wrong. Yeah, they're supposed to point the camera that way.
That's not what I'd do. And Ailish, I love your accent. Your accent is wonderful. And again, this is another thing that I love, the fact that it's not mentioned in the film whatsoever. You know, again, so in many other films you'll see, oh, you know, they'll give you a backstory about why this English person is now living in America, or the American person is now living in England, when in reality, as we all know, there are millions of English people living in America and vice versa. So I love the fact that your accent is not mentioned.
I do too. There was a scene where I mention it with Peter. He asks, like, where in the States I was from. And I forgot about that. I'm only thinking of this now, but you're right. It's completely, was that chucked, Mikey? Because it just didn't matter. It's like the way you tell the story.
Yeah, we cut that scene because we didn't need the exposition of like the backstory. I didn't, you know, I think that that stuff goes in the screenplay, but then when you come to edit your film, you begin to realise, actually, we don't need that information, so we might as well just get rid of it.
No, and I love that. I thought that was really, really nice, the fact that, you know, there was so much else going on in the film that it just wasn't warranted or needed. I really like that. But the one thing that was warranted and needed, and I really have to ask this question, is what's the significance of the elephant?
It's just an elephant, isn't it?
What so way it's facing?
It's there for the audience to work out what the elephant's there for, I guess.
Okay. Very cryptic. So that'll be an interesting one for when people see that. The elephant plays, I think, a very significant part in their relationship. And I think we all do things like that, don't we? You know, certain little things that you like it a certain way and they like it a certain way. And it's never spoken of. It's just done.
Yeah, it's like the sex.
Perfect. Absolutely. But it's never spoken of. It's just done. There are some, I have to say, some fantastic cameos in this one as well. Robin Lang is fantastic as our postie. He takes a torrent of abuse. Julia Deakin is fantastic. And of course, our little cameo from Jason Isaacs as well. Some great, great names in this one, isn't there?
Yeah, we were very lucky to get all of our supporting cast. They were all amazing. So, it's Robin Lang, by the way.
Lang.
Yes, Lane.
Apologies. Apologies.
Robin's an old schoolmate of mine, so I was at high school with him. So he's in nearly everything I've made up to this point as a filmmaker, and we've still got a really. He's one of my best mates. Basically, we're constantly chatting away, and his partner Pauline is in it. Pauline Lynch.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, and just great cameos. Phil Stevens, who's a mate of mine from work. He's also a film director in his own right. He had a film last year. And Lucy Jane Quinlan as well, who plays Phil's partner in the film. Andy Tate, who's a mate of mine. So, yeah, just and Rhiannon Nguyen, who has a small part in there as well. All friends of mine who just happen to be actors, which is really useful for me.
Yeah, I can understand that. But again, every person that plays a part in this film, no matter how big and no matter how small, they bring something to the table, and I like that. There's nobody in this film that is there to just make up the numbers, is there? Every person, no matter how small their part, is significant in this film.
Yeah, they all have a part to play, because otherwise there wouldn't be any point in having them there, I think, you know. So, I try and be quite... when you're working on a low budget and you're working on an 11-day shoot, which is what the film was, you don't have time to have superfluous characters in your film, so... every character has a small part to play in the dynamic of the relationship between Paul and Lucy.
I thought there are many awkward moments in this film, which is what's so great about it. But one of the most awkward moments in this film is when they all sit around the dinner table to have a nice dinner and politics comes into play. And I think a lot of people have been in that situation where you're very, very good friends with somebody. You've known somebody all of their lives. And then all of a sudden, something will come between you, and it tends to be some type of politics or social issue that's going on at the time, and there's differing opinions, and you think, oh no, is this going to ruin the friendship that we've had for so long?
The scenes in the film, because it's something that I've experienced firsthand, that like a lot of the chat that comes through in that discussion has actually happened to me in a situation in a pub once, so that's why it's in there.
And how did you deal with it in a similar way? You just got up and left or told them to leave?
Yeah, I got up and left. I basically said, if I think you think that you've got a more higher opinion than I do on this, I think you think you're right, and for that reason we can't any longer speak about this, because you think you're superior to me with the way that you're putting across your point. So it's just a lot of the stuff in the film is like that. It's stuff that I've either experienced or I've talked about with friends, and it's all gone in there.
Mm. Okay, very, very, very personal. Is there a significance in the colour flashbacks?
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted them to be... They're not necessarily flashbacks either, so... I'll just put that out there. They're what people, it's kind of open to interpretation what they mean, I guess. Whether they're in fact real or not is open to interpretation as well. But I just wanted them to look visually different. I had this notion of a Polaroid. I wanted it to kind of look like a Polaroid, and we've got the sort of metaphor of the slide projector as being the thing, which I think quite a lot of young people who've watched the film, they don't really understand what a slide projector is because it's such an antiquated device now. But I think for people who are of my age group, Steve and Ailish's age group, perhaps, we remember those slide projectors when we were young. We'd quite often look at holiday photos on them and stuff. So I quite like it as a metaphor for memory.
Yeah, I assume I'm a similar age to you guys because I absolutely remember those 100%. Also, I want to give a shout out to Jack Shelbourne because the camera work and everything else in this, I think, is just fantastic.
Yeah, it's beautifully shot. I think the black and white with the colour elements in it works beautifully for the story. And Jack's done a great job of making sure all the shots are as they should be. We talked at length about our influences for shooting this film. I gave him a few things that I wanted it to look like, and he smashed it, basically.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think it's fantastic. Mikey, Steve, Ailish, thank you so much for talking to me. I really, really do appreciate it. I understand completely that you want to leave a lot of this film open to interpretation. So there is only one way that people are going to be able to do that, and that's actually to go and watch the film. So I highly encourage people to do so.
Yeah, and there's only one way to make cheese and beans on toast as well.
You mention that, I desperately want to know what that is, by the way.
Well, the instructions are on Instagram. I put up a post about it. So there you go. If you go on Instagram, you can see the instructions.
That was so good.
You can see the instructions for how to make the perfect cheese and beans on toast.
I'm there. That's literally what I'm about to do because I want to know how to make the perfect cheese and beans on toast. How many of those did you eat, by the way? Did you eat a lot?
Yeah, I think
I ate just one whole one, but I ate it so fast that the next one I had to keep like nibbling. So probably like 1.5, 1.8. Right.
Is that one of those things where
both of us eating because it was delicious and thinking we should maybe plan ahead. Like, we'll have to do another take.
Yeah, because you quite often get actors when they do an eating scene, they have to chew and then spit and things like that. There was no spitting going on. It was all eating.
I don't think so. And it was delicious. So,
did you enjoy it, Steve?
I loved it. Yeah, I haven't eaten anything else since. It's been about 3 years. Yeah, it was good. I think we had that for our catering as well, didn't we? We had beans. I can't remember what we had, but stuff like that.
Yeah. I remember on the day of the shoot when we were doing the cheese and beans, there was a bit of cheese and beans left, and the camera operator, Callum, was like, "Has anyone eaten those?" I'm just going to finish those off if that's all right.
It's also very quintessentially British, isn't it? Cheesy beans on toast.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much for talking to me. I really do appreciate you taking time out. And like I say, I really enjoyed it. I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I wish you nothing but success and positivity with it.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
There you go there, Mikey Murray, Steve Oram and Ailish Cahill. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me. Our Mindset is out on VOD right now, so you can go and purchase that in many, many places.
And in select cinemas too.
Yes, absolutely. Right, let's have a look while we're talking about home. Let's have a look at what is on digital, 4K, Blu-ray and DVDs. One of my films of the year, actually, is finally out on Blu-ray, Little Bone Lodge.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
You can buy that now.
I love that. I gave that a 5 out of 5 and really, really enjoyed that. So if you want to go and buy that to keep it forever and ever and ever, amen, you can now do so. However, on the complete opposite side of the scale, one of the worst films of the year is also out on Blu-ray, and that is Meg 2, The Trench. That's out on all formats. If you wish to purchase it in 4K, I've no idea who, other than maybe Jason Statham himself, you can do so.
Okay. So that's your DVD choices, the worst and the best.
The worst and the
best.
What
a contrast.
Yeah, there you go.
What a contrast.
Meg 2 was so bad. Memento Limited Edition is out on Blu-ray.
Now that, I'll take that. Yes, please.
Fantastic, right?
Yeah.
That's a great film. I haven't seen it for a long time, but it's very, very good.
I remember Christopher Nolan taking like a really early cut of that to a film festival because I was there. Obviously, we had no idea who he was at the time.
No, yeah.
And him kind of presenting this movie to everybody, and it was just, I was just blown away by it.
Was that early 2000s?
It was 2000.
Right, exactly. Wow. Yeah. Insidious 5, The Red Door is out on Blu-ray. Mortal Kombat Legends Cage Match is out on Blu-ray and DVD. Mystic River 20th Anniversary Steelbook on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs is out on 4K and Blu-ray. Steel Magnolias Blu-ray DVD. And finally, John Carpenter's Vampires is out on Blu-ray.
And there we go. All available now. If you are a collector like me, there's a few gems in there to pick up. And that's our Blu-rays and DVDs and digitals for this week.
Right, it's time to head into my favourite feature of the pod, the Tip Top 5.
Yeah!
So this week, in honour of the killings or killers?
It's not even the, it's Killers of the Flower Moon.
See, the podcast that gets everything wrong.
Just me.
Killers of Flower Moon is out this week. It is the latest Martin Scorsese masterpiece. So we have been asking for your Tip Top 5 Martin Scorsese movies. Now, this caused a little bit of contention, I think. I think that, like you say, I think there's possibly one film that's probably in everybody's top five.
So, I said about messages earlier, didn't I?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
I had an interesting... Hang on a second. Let's have a look. So, Wayne Johnson sent me a message. Right, so harking back to last week's pod, and we were talking about Turtles and Godfather.
Yeah.
I just want to loop back around to this before we get to his Tip Top 5.
Okay.
And I said about get in touch if anyone, if there was anyone out there that thought Turtles was better than Godfather. Wayne Johnston does think Turtles is better than The Godfather.
The original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from
1990 is better than The Godfather. He said, and I quote, "I hate The Godfather so much, I could literally rant for an hour about how it's the most overrated film ever made by a mile, and I love the original Turtles film." Wayne Johnston is my people! Although I do really like The Godfather, just to clarify.
Okay.
There we go. So thank you for that, Wayne Johnston. I believe he's also submitting a Tip Top 5.
He has.
So Martin Scorsese films... Very difficult one this week, but let's dive right in after this.
We're going to need a bigger pod. Tip Top 5. Right, are we going to go with listeners first and then me and you?
Yeah, go for it.
We're going to need a bigger pod. Listeners' choices. Okay, right. So, speaking of Wayne, good old Wayne. Right, this is his top five. Number one, Wolf of Wall Street. Number two, Goodfellas. Three, Colour of Money. Four, Departed. Five, Hugo.
Some excellent choices in there.
Yes. Simon Tier has said, these are in no particular order. And I like, so again, this will be open for debate. Wolf of Wall Street. Uncredited, The Aviator. I Can't Leave Out Shark's Tale. Then Gangs of New York. And I'm With You on Goodfellas, as good as Hugo is.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
James Secker has said, number one, Taxi Driver. Number two, Raging Bull. Number three, Gangs of New York. Number four, Casino. Number five, The Departed. No Goodfellas in James's top five.
Interesting. Controversial.
Ali McNiff, number one, Casino. Number two, The Departed. Number three, Goodfellas. Number four, Gangs of New York. And number five, Cape Fear. We've got a top five from Simon Bruce, but if it's okay, he sent a letter that I just want to very quickly read out. So again, Simon, thank you so much for what you've done. Hi guys, I watch my inbox every week for the magic drop of a new films podcast episode. Keep up the good work. Scorsese, you say? Haven't yet seen The Irishman or Killers of Flower Moon, so I can't really comment on those. Having said that, I don't think I can name a bad Scorsese film, and making this just five has been really hard. He has sent some other ones, but I am not going to mention those. So here's his top five. At number five, Bad, the Michael Jackson video.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Number 4, The Aviator. Number 3, Taxi Driver. Number 2, Wolf of Wall Street. And number 1, Goodfellas. I'm sure loads of people will pick this, but it is iconic. I completely agree with you.
Okay, so is that everyone?
I believe so, unless you've got anything I don't know about.
No, I think what we'll do then, we'll go to yours last. As always, I'll just pick 5 I like. I'm not going to go into the 5 in order and why they're in order. I'm just going to say the 5 I like. Killers of the Flower Moon notwithstanding, because we haven't seen that yet.
No.
So I'm going to say my 5 from Scorsese that I love. They're all fairly obvious, to be honest with you. Taxi Driver, definitely in there. Raging Bull's definitely in there. Oh, Mean Streets has got to be in there, I think. King of Comedy's got to be in there. And, oh no, that's 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say Colour of Money as well. I haven't put Goodfellas in there because it's kind of obvious. I kind of feel like Goodfellas sits on its own platform,
yeah, but that's
above
and
beyond everything else.
That's one of those, would you put Pulp Fiction in your Tarantino top 5?
Yeah, because... no. Right, so Goodfellas has come up a lot. I think Goodfellas kind of sits on top of the Christmas tree. It is the Christmas star of Scorsese movies,
right? So that's
right?
Your top 5?
So that's
5...
That's my 5 Scorsese movies that aren't
Goodfellas.
Aren't Goodfellas,
yeah. Right, okay.
Because Goodfellas is such this low-hanging fruit, right? I've just said, like, all these tree references. I put it at the top of the tree as the Christmas tree star. But in terms of other tree references, it is low-hanging fruit. Everyone just goes, Goodfellas. Goodfellas is a masterpiece, and I love it to pieces, but those are the 5 Scorsese movies I like that haunt Goodfellas. There you go.
Right, I just want to go on record as saying anything that hasn't made my top 5 doesn't make it a bad movie. It's just there are exceptional movies here.
Yeah.
I want to give a note to The King of Comedy, which didn't make my top 5, but it almost did. Okay, so at number 5, Cape Fear. Number 4, The Departed. Number 3, The Irishman, which I believe is a phenomenal movie other than the de-aging, which we all agree is bad. But other than that, I think it's a perfect film. Number 2, Raging Bull. And number 1, Goodfellas.
There you go. See? Goodfellas wins out, I think, in most cases. I mean, even in mine, like I said, I just didn't put it in there because I was like, everyone's going to put it in number 1. So let's choose the 5 that aren't mostly populated.
That's fair.
But there we go. All my big 6. Whatever. That's it.
That's
Thank
us
you very
done
much.
For another week.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you to you. Thank you. Share this. Like it. If you like it, share it. Also, remember, keep in touch at Need a Bigger Pod. We will be back next week. Knack next week. I'll be knackered next week. That's definitely a thing that's happening. Thank you to the View Cinema in Gunwolf Keys. Thank you to all View Cinemas. Find yours at myview.com. And thank you to everyone here at Express FM Studios.
It's been a long day.
We have done
day.
So. I feel like I've been in a junket all day. All we've done is been in a studio talk, in another studio talk. Express FM Studios, everyone here, thank you very much, including to the people that lean through the window and make silly, funny faces and gestures at us to try and put us off our game, and they still didn't manage to do that. Thank you very much. Good night.
I like how you put your headphones through the desk.